Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and we are so excited for this special holiday show. A little girl we all have fallen in love with named Zuzu. You may remember this. Once again, my wife, we're in tears watching It's a Wonderful Life this Christmas season, a tradition for so many of us. And Zuzu, who said that iconic line, we're so honored to have her with us. So we'll be back in about 20 seconds with Zuzu, Carolyn Grimes, and we're going to talk about the iconic film It's a Wonderful Life and what it's meant to so many of us. So thank you for tuning in today. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and I think I'll put that as my number one movie line of all time. Teacher, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings. I might not have said that exactly right, but here's the woman who did say it at the tender age of four. Welcome, Carolyn Grimes.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here with you today on your show.
Oh, we're all elated. So it was Teacher, every time a bell rings, am I remembering it right?
Daddy, teacher says, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
You're still just as adorable, and I can see it's the same person. You still are just eternally young when I see your face, when I hear your voice, and thank you so much for being an ambassador of this film. Why has it lasted and meant so much to us, do you think?
Well, I think that when it first started showing in the 70s, families watched it together. And then as their children grew up, their children had their children watch it. And it's passed from family to family as a tradition. And it's not only a tradition here in America, but it's also a tradition in the United Kingdom. It's the number one favorite Christmas movie in the United Kingdom. That says a whole lot about the messages from the film, because we all identify with the many, many messages from the film. I believe Frank Capra was a genius, and I believe he was able to put so many little different messages and meanings throughout the film. Like every time you see the blackbird fly in on Uncle Billy, that means Mr. Potter is bearing down on the Bailey Building and Loan. There's just so many things that we can all identify within the film, and I think that's why we love it so much and why it means so much to us.
It's really something. You say in UK it's number one because that's the land of Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, and I learned that with your coming on and tweeting about your coming on, and I got all these Twitter messages from the United Kingdom of people sharing it and excited you're coming on. And now you're 4 years old, so most of us at that age have a little memory, but not an exhaustive memory. What do you remember about the film, or making the film, or Jimmy Stewart, or Donna Reed, or Frank Capra?
Well, first of all, I was six, and there's a big difference in 2 years there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I read that you started memorizing the lines at four. My mistake. Sorry about that.
Well, I started in the movies when I was four, so I'd already done four films before I did It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay.
And so I was six when I did It's a Wonderful Life, and so I remember quite well. I mean, it was just another job. There wasn't anything special about it. It was just a job. But what I really liked about it was the snow, because it doesn't snow in Los Angeles, and I'd never seen snow. Now, it wasn't real snow, but I was fascinated so much by this wonderful snow. And, of course, it was fun that we had other kids on the set, and I got to play with them. And then also, I was an only child, and we had a tree. You know, this is back in the 40s, and it was maybe 2 feet high, and it sat on a table. We lived in a little tiny house. And so here was this huge, gorgeous Christmas tree, and I just really will never forget it. It was so beautiful, just gorgeous. And so to me, that was really a special time to be able to see this huge, beautiful Christmas tree. Because in those days, my mother and father would take me downtown to see the windows at the department stores. And we'd go all around, and because they were always full of Christmas things and moving things and Christmas designs, and that was always an annual tradition, and we did that every year. It was so fun. So for me to see this big Christmas tree really up front, right there where I could touch it, it was pretty great.
Wow, what wonderful memories just burned into your mind there. Now, I didn't see this till I was a young adult because, as you said, it kind of was kind of gone and then reappeared when it, I guess through a mistake, although maybe it was divinely designed that this fell into public domain and was now on TV all the time. Maybe that's part of the plan to make it get out there, even though I guess for whoever had the royalty rights, that might not have been the best thing. But that kind of really did contribute to us rediscovering it, huh?
Absolutely. Yes, that's how we found the film again. And it worked. The timing was just right. People were ready to accept this film then. When it first came out, it was not a success. And I think one of the reasons, well, there's a lot of reasons, but, you know, it was right after the war and people wanted to be entertained and they didn't want to have a thinker. And this movie is a thinker. And so I think that was one of the reasons that it wasn't really popular when it came out, and it was also not released until December the 20th at the Globe Theater in New York, and that's a little late for a Christmas film, so there's just a lot of things that contributed to the fact that it wasn't a success when it came out, and so indeed it did sit on a shelf for 20-some years before they didn't renew the copyright, and it became public domain, and everybody could then see it, and it was on television on 10 or 20 stations at one time. And so that was how we got exposed to it, though. So it was really a good thing.
Yeah, I saw it for the first time. I think I was maybe 19, and it's just become a tradition ever since. And I thought, how did I miss this film? But all of a sudden, it was everywhere. And so did you go through this period because you left the business of being away from it, but then with the resurgence of the film, your life changing to begin to, you know, be an ambassador in a sense to spread the message and to keep the message of the film alive. So did it kind of call you back into the limelight in that sense after the rediscovery?
Yes, it did. I was 40 years old when someone knocked on my door in the middle of nowhere and asked if I was that little girl in the movie. And I said, well, yeah, I was. And they said, well, could we have an interview? So I drug all my stuff up from the basement and showed them all my stuff and did an interview. And next week the same thing happened, and pretty soon it happened again. And I was thinking, wow, what's going on here? And then I started getting fan mail in the mail. And I was really shocked because it had been years since I'd been in Hollywood, because I was orphaned at the age of 15, and the court in Hollywood sent me to a little town in the Midwest, and that's where I was, and I ended up staying there. So I just was shocked. You know, this is so many years later, and here it's become popular, and I've become popular again. So at the age of 40, I finally decided, whoa, I guess I better see this movie and see what's going on.
Wow.
At
40, that's the first time you remember seeing the whole film.
Yeah, I went to the opening, but I fell asleep, you know.
Yeah, well, you were, like you said, what, 6 or maybe 7 by that point. So, you know, you're tired. That's a long, in the theater, there's something about movie theaters that's the dark and it's comfortable. And so what did you feel or think when you saw this for the first time? Did it kind of hit you like, oh, this is very special here?
Well, of course, I loved the movie. It was fabulous, and I saw what all the hoopla was about, because it really was a stellar movie, and it really offered a lot for a lot of people, and I was won over right away, and I just I just believed in it thoroughly at that point in time, and it was just, you know, people started knowing who I was and everything, and so the more I studied the movie, the more I really got into it, and I read a lot about it, and I found out that, yes, this really was a great movie, and I wanted to be able to talk to people about this film. So that's what I started doing locally where I lived, because I was still raising kids. But in 1993, the Target company used It's a Wonderful Life for the theme in their stores that year for Christmas, and they decided to reunite the Bailey kids. So they did. And they sent us on a tour across America, and that's how it all got started again. And so I kind of got hooked because I loved meeting the people and listening to their stories about how the movie had affected their lives and just being a part of this great film that they loved. And I realized that it had so much to offer, and the people just appreciated it so much that I decided that I would definitely have that film be a part of my life. And if I could in any way be some sort of an ambassador, unofficial, for this film, I wanted to be, because I want to keep the people always in my heart, and I love the people who love the film. And it made a big difference in my life at that point. So 1993 was when it all sort of came together, and I've kind of been on the road ever since for the film.
Hmm. Well, we have so many people that in advance, you know, have saved this broadcast, this podcast. I'm not exactly sure even how they do that, but people love you so much. And if you want to, some people are sending in questions already. By the way, you can email questions to RichardRossiLive@gmail.com, or you can text them to 818-850-5915, 818-850-5915, or call into the show live at 347-637-2379. And by the way, for those of you listening, Zuzu's website is zuzu.net, zuzu.net, and she has also contributed 200 or so of her own memorabilia to the It's a Wonderful Life Museum in Seneca Falls, New York. We want to put that on our road trip, Seneca Falls, New York, Wonderful Life. And into our Facebook site, we have someone that said they went to your website and read your story, and they said they were really moved by your bio, Sharon Campbell Wilharm, who writes a magazine, Faith Flicks, about films that spread message of faith and family. Sharon Campbell Wilharm, oh, she ought to do an interview with you. That would be great in her magazine. But she writes that she was really moved by your own story of suffering. So this film and its message, is, it sounds like it's got you through some tough times in your own life, Carolyn, huh?
It's true, it's true, yes. My life hasn't been wonderful by any means. And so, you know, life is what it is, and you make it the best you can. And there's a lot of inspiration from that film, because George's life certainly went through ups and downs and all arounds, and he survived. And because he had values, he had morals, he had a sense of what was right, and he had all these things that I think we've lost a little bit as we go along, and that's rather sad. So when we watch this film, we sit down and we get kind of a little like going to a gas station. We fill up our tank again so that we can continue for the next year to kind of make it our lives, make a difference, and realize that we all matter, and each one of us can touch a life. Each one of us can make a difference, and we do. So, I mean, how wonderful we have the opportunity to do good and to help other people. That's a blessing in itself.
It really is. And this, by the way, if you're listening, again, it's www.zuzu.net is Carolyn's website. So this museum sounds wonderful, the It's a Wonderful Life Museum, Seneca Falls, New York. How did that come about?
Well, Seneca Falls has a festival every year. We started the festival 14 years ago, and I came into town. if you really want the story, it's pretty cool. There was this guy that was a cameraman on the Oprah show, and he was a friend of mine, and he called me and he said, Carolyn, this town, this is the town. This is where Frank Capra had his idea for the making of the movie. You've got to come here. He said, I'm going to go talk to somebody. So he went and talked to the tourist bureau, and she got a hold of the historical society. Anyway, they brought me in, and I fell in love with the town, and I saw the similarities and talked to the barber who said he cut Frank Capra's hair. And I realized that, you know, this probably was the inspiration for Bedford Falls. But I think that Frank Capra really didn't want to say that because he wanted everybody to associate their own hometowns or their own villages with Bedford Falls. So I really fell in love with the town and the people, and I've been going back every year for the festival. We started the festival, and it's still going strong. This last year we had 4,130 people that ran in the 5K run in the snow. So there's just so much wonderful things that go on at the festival that it was really great. So then we thought, well, you know what? We need to have a place to put the things that I've collected over the years, and I have a lot of friends who have collections as well. And so we decided that this would be a good thing for the town, and it would be a place where people could come year-round to see the It's a Wonderful Life Museum. And so we have a lot of wonderful things in there. The town has made it work really, really well. Right now we have a display on there in regards to Donna Reed and her Mother for Peace action that she was very involved with. And there's her daughter's involved with helping us with the museum, Mary Owen. And there's just a lot of people that have helped. Jimmy Hawkins, who was the little boy in the movie, the kid that burped, remember him? He was. He's helped us, and he's got a display there. And there's just so many wonderful things. Carol Coombs Mueller, who played the piano in the film, my little sister. She's our big sister. She's in, got a display there. And so we all have contributed, and it's really a really fun place to come and learn about Frank Capra's philosophies and about what he thought about making the movie. I mean, it's a huge memory to him as well. And his granddaughter Monica came this last couple weeks ago when we had the festival and shared some stories about him. And it's just really a very wonderful place to come and learn about the people who were involved with the film as well as the messages of the movie and see a lot of memorabilia.
And we were talking about the Jimmy Stewart Museum in my home state of Pennsylvania. My mother and my Aunt Margie recently were through there. We're so proud, of course, in Pennsylvania of Jimmy Stewart being from there. What was your memories of him? Seemed like both on set and off, he was such a wonderful guy.
Oh, he really was. He was very tall. He was 6 feet four. And when I was in Indiana, Pennsylvania one time, we had a special dinner. And it was in the house that he grew up in. And how wonderful. I could just see that gangly young boy running up and down the stairs. And I mean, he was a special kind of guy. And for me to be able to be in the church that he was raised in, I saw the church he was raised in, and just know that he walked those streets and that was a part of his life, it was very, very wonderful. I mean, I just really felt very close to him at that time. And the museum has a mock-up of his bedroom in his childhood home, his office, and they have his booth that he had in Chasen's, which was a restaurant in L.A. that he used to go eat at a lot. And, you know, just it's a very, very nice town.
We have another question coming in about you're leaving, that did you decide to leave the business and live more of a normal life, and what was your thoughts and feelings about that? That's from Bob in Delaware.
Well, Bob, I tell you what, I didn't have a choice. My mother started getting sick when I was 8 years old. She died of early onset Alzheimer's when I was 14. Mm. And my father got killed a year later when I was 15. And so I was an only child, and the court in Hollywood thought it would be in my best interest to send me to a little tiny town in Missouri. And so I lived with my father's brother and his mean wife, and that's kind of how I got out of Hollywood. I've been going to L.A. High. There were 900 kids in my class. There were 36 kids in my class in this town, and it was quite an adjustment, not only culturally, but in every other way, it was an adjustment. And my parents had given me a good foundation, and I really felt like I could make it work. And so I did. And I did it with the love from the people in that little town. The merchants, my teachers, I had real friends. And I realized that this is something that I'd never really been exposed to before. Because in the world of Hollywood, it's a little shallow. And sometimes you don't really find those true people, because people use you, and so I decided that I don't think I ever wanted to go back, and so I instead ended up going to school, and I became a medical technologist, and that's what I did with my life until I was 40.
And that's when the film called to you again, huh?
Right. Ironically, that's the case. I retired when I was 40 because I was raising seven kids, and they needed me more as teenagers than they ever needed me when they were 3 years old. So
mm-hmm.
I decided I better stay home and take care of the kids. And so that's what I did when I was 40, and it all fell into place.
Mm. Well, 40 is a good time to have a whole new shift, a whole new call. I think that's when Moses led Israel out of Egypt, was when he turned 40. And so this town, I guess, was kind of like a Bedford Falls in a way that you landed in post-Hollywood. It sounds like it had some of those small town components or the community of a Bedford Falls for you.
It really did. It was very much like that. And because I was in a really bad home situation and everybody knew it. You know, it's a small town. They know everything that goes on. And so, you know, their support made me realize that there was more in this world than constantly thinking about yourself or having someone, you know, life can be dog-eat-dog in some places. And this wasn't the case. I had a lot of support, and I felt like the people were so real, and they were really like the people that I wanted to be like them. And so that was kind of why I stayed.
Mm. I'm so grateful that you're a public face for this film, because you have an eternal youth about you. You still look young and beautiful. You still sound so buoyant. I mean, what have you learned in life about just staying young and staying, you know, like Zuzu in a sense? I mean, you're young at heart, and it comes through very strong. What's kept you healthy and young? Because you sure have been through a lot, as one of our listeners said. Sharon mentioned how she was so touched by all the suffering on your website at Zuzu.net that you share your story. What's kept you, do you think?
Well, I have faith in my fellow man, and I have faith in God, and I feel like if we ask for it, we're given an inner strength, and we can move mountains if we really do need to do that. You believe in yourself, and that's so important, to believe in yourself. You can make things happen for yourself. And for me, just the very opportunity to travel and be this little girl that people take into their homes every year at Christmas, and it's a tradition, and they love this little girl. Well, my gosh, how can I not benefit from all the love that the fans send to me and to share with me? I mean, it's absolutely so overwhelming that I cannot help but benefit from that and have for years. And that the fans keep me young, I tell you right now. I mean, the letters I get, the good wishes and the stories, it's just, that's what keeps me going. Mm. And if I can still be there for them, I will be there till I can't walk anymore or whatever.
Well, it's very poignant to me as I think about what you're saying, Carolyn, that here's this beautiful little girl that has tragedy after this film is orphaned, goes through this tragedy very early in life, your mother passing away from Alzheimer's, your father in a car accident, and yet this beautiful little orphan girl in this film has been adopted by millions of us in the sense of, you have all these millions of surrogate parents that just fell in love with little Zuzu and love you. And it's just very poignant to me that, you know, in light of learning more of your personal story, how, in a sense, you have people that are family all over the world, in a sense. I mean, it's really something, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. That's very true. In a sense, I do have family all over the world, and I don't take that for granted. I appreciate it so much, because how many people go through life and not be scathed by real life? Things happen, and it happens to everyone. It's not just one or two people. Everybody goes through a lot of emotional tragedy and changes, and that's what happened to me. And, I lost more than just my parents. I mean, there were a lot of things that have happened throughout my life. But if you really believe all this love that the people give to me has given me strength to continue on, and I know that each one of us has the opportunity to give love to our fellow man. And when that happens, that's strength, and that gives them the courage to go on and face whatever they have to face. And I believe, really, truly, that I was given a little rough life because I had a path I had to take. And the door to that path was opened, and I followed it. I've been given that opportunity, and I think God gave it to me because I think I was supposed to be this little girl, Zuzu, and I was supposed to meet a lot of people, and so I had to learn compassion. I had to learn a lot of things in order for me to be able to share with these people that, indeed, I have been in their shoes. And sometimes there's a lot of comfort in just knowing that someone else has felt their pain and knows how they feel. They really know. They can identify with them. I think that is soothing to a lot of people. So, you know, there's all kinds of different reasons why that I feel like the path that I have been given is one I have chosen to follow. And I think I'm very fortunate.
Well, thank you so much for walking in out. I guess we have just a few seconds left. We have one question. I guess we'll have to answer. This will be a quick one, but Krista in Virginia asks if you've done any acting in your adult years or if you think you might ever act again, or is that a part that ended back in your teen years?
Well, I've been offered some little parts here and there, and sometimes local things I will do. But I have no desire to be a burning actress anymore. My life is for It's a Wonderful Life, and truly, that's where my heart is, and that's where I want to be.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for being there for all of us that love you, all of us fans that have been touched by this message. And have a blessed new year. They're about to cut us off in a second here, but I can't tell you how much it means to all of us at this holiday time to have you on the show. I can't tell you how grateful I am, Carolyn. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. And everyone have a wonderful and joyous new year.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn. God bless you. And thank you to all of you for listening. And remember, as Zuzu has told us, here she tells us one last time. And for all the angels that many of us have lost, people, my dad's died, and Carolyn was had her parents die at a young age. And to all those angels up there, and to all of you angels listening, God bless you. Thank you again for tuning in to Richard Rossi Live.